this podcast has been months in the making.
I think the sun was out when we tried to do this.
Oh mate, that was like deep into 2018. But anyways, I'm here with trichologist extraordinaire Miss Stephanie Say. Why are you laughing for? Because it's real. I need to give you, like, you know, the accolades. I have to start listing, do you know what I mean? Out here talking. If it's a natural hair event and Steffi's not on the bill, it's not even, like, worth your time. So I'm just going to say that now. If you're going to a natural hair event and there's no trichologist and it's not Stephanie, I beg, ask them for a refund on your ticket, because I can't guarantee what you're going to learn. No shade, but, you know, bookings and blessings in 2019 is what we're asking for.
Thank you. The same to you.
Yeah, man. Okay, so for people that don't know, because I feel like I definitely went and did my research on you, I definitely stalked her for a little bit when I was trying to become a trichologist. But for people that aren't familiar with you, which I think is very small, because as I said, you're at every natural hair event. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? How long have you been a trichologist? And yeah.
Okay. Well, as you know, I'm Stephanie Say. I've been a trichologist since 2013. I would say officially from 2015, because I was scared for 2 years.
But you had your certificate though.
Yeah, I had my certificate. Yeah. I was qualified, but I was terrified of doing anything trichology related. I did a few events, I did a few, you know, low-key things, but I think I really started to find my stride in 2015. That's when it really began, my story. A lot of people ask me why I became a trichologist, and one of the reasons was because I'd lost my hair early on in my life, and then, you know, after a cycle of abuse for many years, I thought to myself, right, enough is enough. And I went to see a trichologist myself, and I just thought to myself, he said to me, oh, we do a course, are you interested? And I was like, actually I am. Because I think that it's not just me suffering out there. If I've suffered and I've had to go to so many different people and try to find the right person to try and deal with the issues I was suffering from, then other people must need this help. And I wanted to be one of the people to offer that. So cool. Yeah, that's my story in a nutshell.
Yeah.
And my first degree was law, so...
So you smart.
Oh, no. If you know how I cried over my trichology books...
Well, that's good. Like, I feel like that adds a bit more weight to it, because when people hear trichology, they're kind of like, what is this, like, made up thing that you've studied? Like, you know, I feel like it's getting more popular now.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing a lot of rise in short courses, which I think can be good as like an introduction.
Yeah, definitely.
But I definitely don't think it's something where you can do a 2-day course and call yourself a trichologist in any way, shape or form.
No.
Because of like how rigorous the study is.
It's true. I mean, I studied with the Institute of Trichologists, and that course is 2 years. It is part-time, but I had to give up 1 month, one Wednesday every month for those 2 years for clinical training.
Yeah.
And I also needed to do a lot of studying at home. I had to have, I went to lectures at the Institute, and it's science. So coming from an art subject to science is really, really difficult. It wasn't an easy transition. And it wasn't a decision I made lightly. I mean, I studied microbiology, physics,
chemistry, organic chemistry,
maths. I mean, like, I ran away from maths in school. I was like, oh, I'm done with this. But I had to go back and revisit all of that stuff. And it was anatomy and physiology. I just remembered that, all that stuff. So it's not just, you know, I read a chapter in a book about hair conditions and now I'm a trichologist. Like Ebony, we both studied hard for
hundreds
this.
Hundreds of hours.
Yeah. We studied hard, you know? And it's not an exam. I feel like I've done exams where I've just gone in and I'm like, yeah, I can find something to write. You can't make this up.
There is no playing.
Yeah, there's no playing. And I remember doing the Viva part, which is the oral exam. And I'm thinking, I can't just make stuff up. I don't have time to think about something that I could write. Someone's asking me a question to my face and I must answer them now.
Properly. You know,
properly.
About the structure of the skin or the hair.
Yeah, exactly. Or saying, if I saw this under a dermatoscope or on someone's scalp, what would I be thinking? You know, it's not, it wasn't easy. So,
yeah. Well done for completing.
Yes, and you too.
Thank you. Okay, so for the people that are kind of like are here by chance or are kind of still trying to figure out what is trichology, how would you explain it to them in like a nutshell?
Trichology is the study of the science of the hair and scalp, basically. So you study diseases of the hair and scalp, how to treat them, Yeah, and that's it in a nutshell.
Cool. So kind of like a hair doctor.
Yes.
Even though we're not allowed to be called that, but essentially that's kind of what we do.
Yeah, I always say that we're medically trained but not medically qualified.
Yeah.
So we understand a lot about the structure of the skin, the hair, the scalp, diseases of the scalp. There's a limit to what we can do, and any trichologist that tries to tell you that they can do these wondrous things, or they try to administer medical treatment to you, as in, you know, maybe injections, unless they're a qualified doctor, they shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, something to keep in mind. There's a lot that trichologists can do for you, but a good trichologist will also know their limits.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important because we don't work in isolation.
Mm-hmm.
So our job is to, as we said, like help diagnose and kind of give people a little bit more clarity on conditions they may be facing. But we also work in tandem with other professionals.
Yep.
So who are the kind of people that you would say like you also kind of direct people to if you, not maybe necessarily able to help them, but also need their support in treating because it's more than one person?
Yeah. I mean, there are aesthetic practitioners, dermatologists, hairdressers, hairstylists, they're all part of the arsenal of the team that I think a good trichologist should have around them. It's not just a one-man show, I can cure all your ails. There will be a team around that trichologist that can help do certain things as well.
Cool. And so talk me through a typical day as a trichologist. I'm asking you like I don't know any of this stuff.
That's why I'm looking at you. I'm like,
this is like my most formal interview. I'm just like, so, how do you feel about this?
I'm looking at her, I'm thinking, hold on.
I know all this stuff in it, but I feel like sometimes I don't, not necessarily that I can't articulate it well, but it's nice for people just to hear another view of it as well. So who are you expecting to come and sit in your clinic? Like, you know, who needs your help?
I say that any person with any concerns about their scalp or their hair, so be that you've got a condition on your scalp, you've got a very itchy scalp, flaking, but it seems to be getting worse. If you're suffering from hair thinning, you've got patches, anything like that to do with your hair and your scalp, you've got bumps on your scalp, you don't know what it is. These things you should seek guidance for and help, because you know what, something could start as a small bump might end up being a condition that's going to cause hair loss in the long run. So you know, if you can pick up these things early, it's better to get them, nip them in the bud early rather than come later. So that would be the ideal patient, like, to come and see me. Anyone with concerns about their hair or scalp.
Okay, so in my experience, I found that most people don't really present with their problems until it's become a full-on condition. So usually I'll say that the average time people are waiting is at least like 4 years. So they'll have something that starts off as a little concern and will still be like maybe visiting a salon or even seeking help in that time. Why do you think that they're unable to come and find a trichologist or even, you know who to go to with their concerns, their issues?
I think there are a number of issues at hand. I was going to give you like a number and say there are 3 reasons, but when I do that, it turns into 10. So I'll just say there are a number, and then when we get to that number, we'll
stop. We'll figure it out, yeah.
So number one, I think people don't know trichologists exist.
Right.
And they don't know what to search. Mm-hmm. So say, for example, you're looking for somebody with hair loss, you might put hair loss concerns, and then you might get some weird remedies online or some, you know, someone who goes, can cure hair loss.
We're going to get back to that.
So that's one of the reasons. Number two, you might have been to your GP for help. And, you know, GPs are trained very widely, and they've got experience in all kinds of ailments. But when it comes to hair, the training is limited. So maybe, you know, you've gone to the GP and they've said, oh, it's this type of hair loss. And then that's been it. You just think maybe it's a genetic hair loss, or, oh, it's quite natural because maybe your bloods were low or something. There's something that they've said that is causing it. So you go away and you think, oh, everything is fine. It could also be that you've been to see a specialist and they didn't give you the answer that you needed, or they didn't fully clarify what the issue was and you didn't realize that the problem was going to get worse.
Okay.
And so you're sitting down in silence thinking that everything is okay. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, it's a condition that, you know, is progressive and you needed more of an intervention. So, you know, and there's also distrust, general distrust. I think in the general, especially for people with Afro-textured hair, there is a big distrust with professionals touching their hair or their scalp because of historical issues.
I think that's a good point. Yeah.
So that was 4 points, I believe.
Okay, good, good, four. Good. I'm like, what was number one again?
Number one is finding trichologists finding, you know, a decent hair clinic.
Yeah. And so, yeah. So my comments were going to kind of like, they all meshed in together with all of the points. So I find that when people are suffering with hair loss, they will, especially for Afro hair, because we're both Afro specialists, they will go onto Google and type, you know, hair loss help. And there are a few companies that kind of come up, they have ads and stuff. And I find that in my experience, not to put anybody else down, but a lot of the places that people are going to, they have like basically a salesperson as their representative for theme of hair loss. So you get kind of sucked into this free consultation and then tied into a really costly contract.
Yes.
And I find that when people are usually, as I said, if they've been dealing with a condition for a few years, they become desperate and they're willing to pay almost any amount to kind of solve that problem. So they're willing to go to people, maybe not check credentials as much or know that they're popular and will give over lots of their hard-earned cash for, you know, remedies that aren't proven or don't necessarily, they haven't got even got a good diagnosis in the first place is what I find.
Exactly.
And so when they are seeing that, okay, maybe this doesn't work, they're kind of like, oh, if I don't want to go to the next person because the same thing's going to happen again. Or even if at the beginning when it's just a small bump or, you know, a little bit of hair loss, they think, okay, you know, I don't really want to pay up front for such a small concern. And like with the doctors, I think doctors are great. We work with doctors all the time. But in 10 minutes, it's very hard to decipher what could be the cause of hair loss. Because I would say for women, there could be like 10 different things going on that can cause different types of hair loss that express themselves very, very similarly. And so in that 10 minutes, you're just kind of like, okay, this isn't life threatening. I don't need to give you any medication. Just kind of like sit with it and see what happens.
Yeah.
And it's no, like, it's no shade to doctors that they don't care or anything. It's just that they're trying to help, I don't want to say more sick people, but more critical conditions rather than something that's purely aesthetic. And we would spend, I spend, what, up to an hour at least?
Yeah.
And we talk about everything. So it gets very, very personal. Like, sometimes I'm just like, I'm really sorry, but I'm going to like ask you all of your business because I'm going to probably know more about you at the end of it than your friends will, than your doctor will maybe. Because all of these things can like play a different role.
Yeah. And there can be the smallest thing that someone will say that can completely shift your whole diagnosis. So, you know, you're on a path, you've got a thought in your head, you're thinking, okay, you never make a snap decision in trichology. When someone sits down and you see their head, you can't make a snap decision then. Like you said, it will be the everything that they say, and then there'll be one thing that they say that makes you turn a, take a left turn. You're like, hold on, let me stop, this is not going the way I thought it might go, it's actually going this way. And you have to follow that, because you know, you use your eyes to see what's happening, but you also listen to what the person is reporting as part of their symptoms. That's a very big part of it. So yeah, it's true. And what you said about people looking for experts, you know, again, this is not throwing people shade on anybody's business formula, but what you'll get is a lot of free upfront consultations, and then you'll get the paying on the back end for treatment. In both of our clinics, I can say that, you know, forcing people to take away a treatment plan is not part of our ethos.
No, we're ethically bound.
Yeah.
Like, for both of the companies that we worked with, you can go online and we have to, like, the way we do things, I feel like sometimes people ask about my business, like, why do you do this? Why don't you charge maybe a little bit less or have, like, a treatment plan? I'm like, firstly, I don't know what you need when you come in. And secondly, I will lose my license if I treat you a certain way.
Yeah.
And I have to behave by a strict code of conduct which makes sure that you are like put first as the customer rather than just, you know, come and take your money, charlatan selling you snake oil.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, the upfront cost, maybe that hour that you sit with the trichologist and they've charged you that fee, it may be the only fee you need to pay that individual. You might have a follow-up consultation 6 months, maybe a year down the line as a follow-up. But it's not going to be a cost usually that you should be tied into for a long period of time. It should be your choice as an individual whether you want to go back. and have any follow-up treatments, because sometimes, you know, some trichologists will offer scalp treatments mm-hmm. and other treatments to help you alleviate your symptoms, but that's your choice as to whether or not you want to come back for that. It shouldn't be a situation where you're locked into, and that's I think that's how we both feel about the model. It shouldn't be, you know, oh, I'm tied into this treatment plan for forever and ever. And like I said, that's not throwing shade on anyone's business model. Everyone can operate how they want to. And people can go to whoever they feel comfortable with, but that's not how we operate.
Yeah, and I think it's just something to note as well, because I find that treating hair loss, even if I have, like, we talk about different mm-hmm. conditions that we see,
mm-hmm.
but the progression of it can be so different
mm-hmm.
and has many different factors. So I couldn't mm-hmm. say, okay, this is, I can give you like a range that maybe mm-hmm. I expect that, you know, in a month's time or six mm-hmm. months' time to see this amount of difference.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't say you're going to need 12 sessions exactly, because in a month's time you could be in a completely different place because new factors may emerge.
Exactly. It makes it, that makes so much sense. Yeah. You know, I didn't even think about it in those terms that, you know, I've seen you, you need 12 sessions. How do I know that?
Yeah.
I literally, legitimately cannot know that, because first of all, we need to make sure that that diagnosis is correct, because there can be three or four conditions layered on top of one another. Mm-hmm. And they can all be doing their own madness in different fields, you know? So, you know, you might have this condition, but then this condition is the one that's causing the most shedding.
Yeah.
And this is what we need to get under control, because the other condition's actually quite stable. So it's really difficult to say, yes, you need 12 sessions. You're so right. I guess because I've never thought about that business model. I never even thought of it.
It just, it, like, when you, I feel like sitting on our side of the table, it doesn't quite make sense.
Yeah.
And so I feel like, it's kind of hard on the business side with us to be like, this is what we expect every time, because mm-hmm. again, I might treat someone, like see someone once,
mm-hmm.
but I can give them information that will change maybe their habits or some of the practices mm-hmm. that they have that could alleviate all of their symptoms. So I want you to see them again.
Yeah.
And that's great for them. Mm-hmm. Maybe not great for my pocket, but
yes.
But I'm happy that I can send them on their way, that they kind of are empowered with that knowledge now.
Exactly.
Rather than them coming to me every month, week, or however so often, and just we're sitting there looking at each other.
Yeah.
And also, I think that some people want a really quick fix.
Yes.
And we know that nothing's going to happen overnight.
Yeah, that's a really important thing. If any treatment plan that's been put in place for you, you need to give a minimum of 3 to 6 months.
Yeah.
If you've got something, if you're using something, you know, to try and, you know, Ghana, or you're changing something in your diet, you're taking iron supplements, you're taking something, you need to give yourself 3 to 6 months for your hair to show that, or your hair and scalp to show that.
Exactly.
If you think your hair grows half an inch a month, okay, how am I going to be able to see, and it grows in cycles, how am I going to see in 1 month what's happening?
Exactly.
I can't see anything in 1 month. I might be able to see something, especially if you've taken photographs, which we typically do in clinic, but I might not see anything. 2 months, 3 months, yes, I can start to see change. That's about an inch and a half of growth. And then 6 months, you're looking at maybe 3 inches if you're lucky.
If you're lucky, yes. Because most of the conditions will be slowing down your hair growth.
Exactly.
Or causing the hair to shed excessively.
Exactly.
So even though you may be growing new hair, there's things that's causing it to fall out faster.
Yeah.
And so if then it's just like, okay, we're trying to slow down that process, or maybe make sure that the hair is in good condition when it's growing out.
Yeah.
And that is not a quick process under any circumstances. Yeah.
So if you hear someone say they will grow your hair in 1 month, like, we have to use a certain level of, you know, our own logic and let our guts kick in and say, that's not realistic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that really isn't realistic. But I think because of that pain factor, that pain point where you're in that place, it's I always use the example, like, my brother's in fitness, and he says to me that, you know, everyone wants a skinny pill. They want a pill, and then tomorrow they'll be skinny.
Yeah.
It's the same with hair loss.
Exactly.
They want that pill, and then tomorrow their hair is back. That's not going to happen.
I think one of my first episodes was talking about all of the different things that I see people do in the name mm-hmm. of hair loss.
Yeah.
And I feel like one of the recent ones that has come up is rice water.
Oh, my goodness.
And I feel like we laugh, and I'm sorry if you are currently doing a rice water. If you're listening to this while you're doing wash day and you have rice water, I beg you just pour it down the sink now, because I don't even think it's good for your drains, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, Would you like to handle that one?
I think you should on this occasion, because I think I had a phone call with you saying to you, like, what's going on with this rice water? Because as far as I'm concerned, and then you just...
Okay, so I was actually asked to write a blog about this a couple of months ago when it first started to peak its head. Mm-hmm. And during my research, I was, you know, when you just kind of do a quick search on Google to see like what people are talking about it. And there were many blogs, even some like the bigger glossy magazines were mm-hmm. talking about rice water. And they were all like, oh yeah, you know, Asian women use it and it's the reason why their hair grows. And I was like, okay, let me go to Google Scholar mm-hmm. and find journals, because I'm a scientist. I like things that have got mm-hmm. facts. I understand there's anecdotal mm-hmm. evidence, but I want to know what's the science behind it. Because mm-hmm. as far as I'm concerned, rice water is basically starch. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when you rinse your rice, it goes cloudy and mm-hmm. that's the starch because mm-hmm. it doesn't dissolve in water. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I don't know that starch has this effect on the hair. And I'm seeing people saying that, oh, no, it's protein. It's really good for hair growth. And even it as a rinse, I'm like, if you're just rinsing something over your hair, mm-hmm. you haven't given it any processing time. Mm-hmm. So how is it absorbing that quickly yep. compared to products that have been researched in a lab, spent millions on? I'm mm-hmm. like, okay, what do I have to do? And I'm like, do you use basmati? Mm-hmm. Are we using jasmine rice?
Yeah.
Are we using long grain? Which brand do I need to go? Is it yeah. Uncle Ben's? Is yeah. it Minute Rice? And then do you wash it straight away? Or is it you have to boil it first? And I'm like, you guys are wasting good rice, you know?
Yeah.
My mum would beat me if I started, oh, mum, I'm doing rice water rinse. I'm sorry. The bag you struggled to carry from Peckham, yeah? I'm going, no jollof on Sunday. Because everybody's been doing rice water rinse. Are you crazy? And then so they were saying that there was a study done, and it was a retroactive study. So they were using information from documents from like the 1700s or something. Mm-hmm. And there's an area, I think it was in China. Mm-hmm. And the women there, like, they grew rice mm-hmm. that had surrounded by paddy fields. And they said that they used some of the rice products, byproducts, mm-hmm. as part of their beauty mm-hmm. treatments. And in that area, they have long, very long hair. But I'm like, did you look at the genetics, the epigenetics of the area? Mm-hmm. What other things in their diet? Because this was hundreds of years ago.
Exactly.
So there's less pollutants. They're probably living mm-hmm. a very organic. They're living away from cities. Mm-hmm. So their lifestyle's probably a lot slower. Mm-hmm. Women then times typically didn't do much work, so they weren't mm-hmm. exerting themselves in the ways that we do now. Mm-hmm. Beauty was a big thing to them, mm-hmm. so they were spending more time primping mm-hmm. and keeping themselves looking a certain mm-hmm. way. So this one sentence in this study had turned into this whole phenomenon, mm-hmm. and people are swearing blind, and I'm like, you're literally fermenting rice. Because mm-hmm. some people will be like, oh yeah, put it in a jar, mm-hmm. put it in your cupboard. I'm like, you don't know where that rice was grown, you don't know what things have been sprayed on
yep,
it.
Yep.
And you're growing these things. You don't know what bacteria and organisms are there. Mm-hmm. And you're going to put that on your skin to be absorbed. I'm like, you guys are actually asking for superbugs galore.
Yes.
I'm like, penicillin can't save you again, you know?
Yeah. I when I read it, I thought this doesn't... The way I operate now is... I mean, my hair science studies aside, if it doesn't make sense to me, I'm not doing it. And yeah. this just doesn't make sense to me because... As you said, even if I'm looking at, you know, these women were, you know, scooping rice and water from, you know, the paddy fields where I think it was like the irrigation that comes yeah. off it, and they were using it. And I'm thinking, but again, like you said, their diet plays a big part of it.
And do you know what the joke is? In the actual original study, it says that the hair was dry. They can make the hair dry. And I laughed. Because like whoever read stopped halfway through the sentence and took what they wanted out of it.
So it just doesn't make sense to me, and I've never signed up to it. I've never done it, and yeah. I won't do it.
Because, and I don't recommend it either.
Yeah, I don't recommend it either because again, you don't know what organisms you're growing when you're doing that, and already a lot, the climate in the UK already wreaks havoc with our scalps, mm-hmm. especially on black skin. Our scalps, you know, many people are suffering from dry scalp, from seborrheic dermatitis. They're suffering, and then you're going to add something else into the mix.
That could be an irritant.
And then you don't know what the issue is.
Yeah.
You know? And then we might add a bit of oil to the scalp as well to get rid of the dryness.
Well, are you ready? I feel I have to take my blanket off for this one and just limber up my shoulders and drink some water because,
click
I've
my
been
neck.
Fighting with people for this one. Okay. So you guys have been asking. Let me even move this so I don't, if I start getting wild, I don't kick the stand over.
And listen, people have come for me when I have said this, so I don't change my views on this. Oh, someone's sipping water.
I had to sip. As my legs would say, you know, just to make my throat lubricated.
Sip water. I don't have tea because we're going to get the tea I'll right say, now. My,
if you know where my kettle is, I can't even tell you, you know?
We're going to get the tea right now. I'm going to pretend I'm drinking tea.
Mate, you're ready for this shit. I feel like you need to sit down because I know some of your legs are already shaking when you're thinking about this. You've got your castor oil looking at you in the front. Your coconut oil is there. Yes. You've even got a mix in your spray bottle. Yes. Bring them all together. Let's gather around as friends.
Yeah.
And let's tackle this oil situation once and for all.
Yes.
Okay. So.
This won't be the last conversation, though.
It won't be the last conversation. No, we're going to have this every time.
Yes.
All right. So I've started doing on my Instagram, Mythbuster Mondays.
Yeah.
And every Monday, I try to address a myth that I feel like is prevalent in the black hair community. Mm-hmm. So, maybe a couple of weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
my Mythbuster Monday was, mm-hmm. you shouldn't oil your scalp. And I've never received so many DMs, so many messages. I swear people come in to come fight me, you know. Like, they couldn't believe it. They just refused to accept anything that I was saying. But as I say, I always say, do your research and don't believe anything blindly. But no one could give me a good reason why they're still oiling their scalp rather than tradition. And I think just boredom.
Yeah.
So I'm going to leave this one for you to handle and I might jump in. Because I feel like I'm getting hot, you know? thinking about it.
Well, let me start with this. I haven't oiled my scalp in over 7 years. Actually, yeah. I think it's 8 years now.
Okay, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I was free some time ago.
Freedom!
You know, I stopped about 8 years ago. And when I first started in trichology, I used to err on the side of caution of telling people not to oil their scalp. Because people seem to have this really violent reaction towards you telling them not to oil their scalp. Mm-hmm. And at the time, you know, in the early stages, I felt like, you know, perhaps I was, you know, I needed to err on the side of caution and be careful with what I said. But to be honest, with conditions like seborrheic dermatitis, which feed off, you know,
malassezia. Could you give a quick definition of what sebderm is?
Yeah, so seborrheic dermatitis, what you'll find is you have an itchy, flaky scalp. It's similar to dandruff, but I would say it's dandruff ramped up.
Yeah.
That's the easiest way for me to explain mm-hmm. it without getting into all the science of it. What you'll find is like you'll get branny, kind of greasy, oily flakes.
Yeah, and it's building certain locations up your scalp. As well. So usually around like the hairline.
Yeah, hairline.
Like behind the ears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It can be in your vertex, so the top of the crown of your head. It can be in those areas. You can find it throughout your scalp as well.
Yeah.
Some people have it rife throughout their scalp. And you know, if it's caused by a yeast called Malassezia, and a lot of people don't realize that this yeast loves oil.
Mm-hmm. Did you hear that? One more time for
it
the people.
It loves oil.
It
loves it. So when you're putting, if you've got seborrheic dermatitis already, what you're doing is you're actually feeding the condition.
Yeah.
Now that aside, let's put aside a condition. Let's actually talk about your scalp.
Yeah.
Your scalp, each hair follicle has its own oil gland.
Okay.
Attached to it, which is called your
sebaceous gland.
Hey,
yay! That quick on the spot test there. Yes. So I know the answer for this one. Yeah, I got it right, 100% for Ebony.
Yes, so it's your oil gland attached to each hair follicles.
Every single one.
Yeah, you have over 100,000 hair follicles on your scalp.
Yeah.
So imagine that you've got that many oil glands on there. And this oil is perfectly balanced for your scalp.
Mm-hmm.
It's the correct pH.
Yeah.
It helps balance your scalp. And it's produced for a purpose.
Yeah.
Now, what's happening is that we are putting oil because we say our scalp is dry. Now, when people say that to me, I say to them, so the reason for you putting the oil is to make your scalp more moisturized, hydrated. Oil doesn't do these things. Oil...
Wait, what?
It doesn't do those things.
So oil will not moisturize your hair.
Nope.
Oil will not hydrate your hair.
Nope. Okay. Or your scalp.
Or your scalp. Yeah. It will not moisturize or hydrate.
Yeah. We've already got a mechanism that does those things for our scalp.
Okay.
That keeps your scalp lubricated.
Cool.
Which is your sebum, which is the oil gland. I always say to people, if you're thirsty, you don't drink oil.
Mm-hmm.
I say, if your grass is dry, you do not pour oil on it.
Yeah.
You wet it. So why are we putting oils on the scalp?
When it's dry.
When it's dry. it's not the reason what's happening now is because people have been doing the oil on the scalp for so long. It's almost like the sebaceous glands are saying, well, I don't need to do anything.
Exactly.
The body's an intuitive mechanism. So if I'm doing something over and over again, it's not going to do extra. It's not going to say, well, she's putting this oil stuff on her scalp. I'm not going to produce sebum for her to... It's a waste.
It's kind of like muscle memory. Yes. You know, like if you don't exercise, you lose muscle mass and that kind of thing. So
exactly.
The same way, if you don't allow your body to do those functions, it stops doing them.
Yes. So you're putting oil on the scalp, the sebum isn't being produced. You don't need to oil your scalp because your sebum is there. And what happens is that when you try not to oil your scalp, your sebum's not used to being in full production. Mm-hmm. It goes almost into a latent stage. It's like, oh, well, you haven't been oiling your scalp. So she's going to do it in a few days.
Yeah.
Or is she not doing it? I don't understand. Yeah. Where's the oil? And it's like, oh, just wait. She'll do it. She's going to slick that castor oil on. Give her 2 days. It'll be there. And then it's like, no, I don't think she's going to do it. And they're like, no, she won't. So there's this fight.
Yeah.
Internal fight where, you know, oil glands are talking to each other saying, do we make an appearance? Do we not?
Mm-hmm.
And more often than they're not because they know that you're going to intervene with the oil.
Okay.
And so if you allow your scalp to regulate, give it a few weeks, and it's not going to be an overnight sensation. This is going to be a couple of weeks before your oil starts producing. I don't oil my scalp. If I stick my hand into my scalp and rub my fingers against my scalp and show you, the tips of my finger will feel a bit waxy.
Yeah.
And you'll also see a bit shiny. Yeah. That's my sebum.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I say that, people come for me. People come for you.
Yeah. They probably try to fight me. And I just bought a big bottle of castor oil. What am I supposed to do with it? I'm just like, anything but put it on your scalp.
And the thing is that castor oil, for example, is so viscous.
Yeah.
You are actually blocking the ability of any moisture to penetrate your scalp.
Yeah.
Because it's so thick. Honestly, you're just blocking any goodness out of that.
Mm-hmm.
You have to wash that out to be able to get anything back into your scalp.
And I think, again, it's like a habit thing.
Yeah.
So we've grown up doing these practices. So from when we are very, very young, our parents did it. And this isn't, again, this is not trying to be shady to anyone. We're just trying to share information so that we can prevent some of the problems we see commonly and the things that people complain about the most. It's just a habit. I don't know where we were even talking about how some of the practices came from people being out of their usual environment.
Yeah.
So we're having to use anything that was available to them to try and keep their hair in a good state when they were out of their home countries.
Yeah.
And so products were developed for that reason.
Yeah.
But again, it wasn't always necessary because our bodies would have done these kind of things as well. We just weren't given it the time to regulate itself.
Mm-hmm.
So with oils, again, people don't realise that oil is just a sealant.
Yes, it's a sealant.
Yeah.
It's a lubricant. I said to Ebony the other day, like, I got to thinking about other analogies and I thought, you don't moisturise your engine in your car, do you?
Exactly.
You lubricate it with oil. You pour oil into your car so that it lubricates the parts in the engine.
Mm-hmm.
You don't do it to moisturise them. The word that's used for oil is lubrication.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time, the reason we apply oil to the ends of our hair or to our hair strands is to create like a kind of... It's to lubricate the strands so they move across each other nicely.
To reduce friction, to reduce damage, that kind of thing.
Exactly. That's what...
Stop us getting single strand knots, those kind of things.
Exactly. And to the ends of your hair, if you've moisturised or put some hydration back into your hair by way of, like, water, by putting some oil at the ends of your hair, which is the oldest part of your hair, you're actually holding that moisture in because the oil is a barrier.
Exactly.
It doesn't allow the water to leave. And it allows a little water in.
Cool. So I feel like people maybe heard don't oil your scalp and heard white noise for the last few minutes. And they're probably just wondering, okay, so what do I do with my scalp? Yeah. I know what I say.
Yeah.
What do you say?
Well, I've got two approaches.
Okay.
I've got one, just leave it and try and get it to come through. But I also say spray some light water on. Like I sometimes say use a hydrosol. That's nice.
Okay.
It's like some rose water or lavender hydrosol or something like that on your scalp. If you find it's excessively dry, because it can happen in this climate. And just like, and when I say scalp massage, I'm not talking about this I'm not talking about any madness. I'm just talking about a light, you know, with the pads of your finger, just like moving around the water so that it gets into your hair.
Yeah.
Loosen up some of the sebum that's probably there, but it's just not used to moving around. I'm not asking you to give yourself a full on head massage.
I feel like my advice is slightly different to yours. So I would tell people to use a spray bottle of water, and I'll tell them to use that maybe a light moisturizer, like a leave-in or so.
Yeah, they can
that
do way,
that. Something that's water-based that isn't gonna like, it's gonna absorb, it's gonna like penetrate the scalp.
Yes.
And it won't really affect the sebaceous glands too much. So it won't be like, oh no, we've got oil again, we don't have to do anything. But it also kind of gives you a little bit of instant relief.
Yes, I agree. I do that sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes I've been known to mix a bit of my hydrosol with a bit of my leave-in conditioner and spray it under.
Okay, cool.
Especially if I've got braids.
Yeah, you need something extra.
Because sometimes your scalp is a bit exposed. Yeah. So
with the scalp massages, I definitely tell people to leave.
Yeah.
I keep their hands out of their hair.
When they say, like, I don't mind. Sometimes it's just nice, you know.
Yeah,
just
it's soothing. Definitely.
But I think a lot of people don't know how to do a scalp massage.
Exactly. And that's why I say, because I'm like, you're doing more damage with friction.
Yeah.
So if you can, I'm of the opinion that, you know, those spider metal heads things you can get, like the massages, I'd rather use that.
Yeah.
Because the pressure is even.
Yeah.
You're just there touching your head now. It's very, very weird.
Very nice. I just realised that my head felt a bit, and then I'm just like loosening it. Oh, it's so nice.
I'm just giving Stephanie the eye because I don't know what happened just in the middle.
This is nice. Like, I kind of did a head massage to demonstrate what I meant.
Okay, can you explain what you did? Because you did it very differently. So you had your hands on either side of your head with your fingers kind of pointing towards your crown.
Yeah.
And you were more using the pressure to kind of move your scalp around altogether rather than your fingers going in and out like kneading.
Yeah, I'm actually moving because your scalp will move, your skin on your scalp will move around. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like basically moving it, hand on either side of my head, like hand splayed, but I'm just moving my scalp around and back because sometimes your scalp can feel really tight.
Yeah.
And it just feels nice. Mm-hmm. It just feels very nice. It releases tensions in your head. And I'm just like moving my hand around. My whole palm is moving in circular motions. Not like rubbing my scalp, but moving my whole head and my scalp.
Yeah. Cool. If that
makes sense. Maybe I'll show you in a video.
Yeah, I think we might do a video. Maybe not today though, but we'll eventually do a video.
Not today. I'm not looking cute.
Oh, look cute all the time.
Oh, thank you.
That's all right. I was going to say two things there, but they're going to take me in different directions.
Okay, let's hold one in the air.
Yeah, so we're going to focus on the oils for now.
Yep.
So I have found that with a lot of the pushback, people will tell me that they've used oils and it's helped with hair loss.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about some of the different conditions that... not maybe true for, but they might feel like this is working for.
Okay, yeah. I think one of the... I don't even know where to begin with this one.
Okay.
So, like, there's so many directions. So there's anecdotal evidence. They'll tell me, my friend used oils and their hair grew back. Now, what I always say is that I don't know what was up with your friend's hair.
Exactly.
I don't know whether they had one of many different hair conditions. Mm-hmm. And there are many conditions that can spontaneously recover.
Exactly.
Alopecia areata being one of them.
Telogen effluvium.
There's
hormonal changes.
Yes.
Even like scalp conditions can change by itself as well.
Change in diet.
Yeah.
Like you were vegan and you weren't eating properly as a vegan. That's not a judgment on vegan diets. I'm saying that some people go change their diet and they don't know how to eat properly. Mm-hmm. Or, for example, I've gone from vegan to eating meat, and all I'm doing is hammering meat. I forgot the vegetables now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So either extreme of diet, not doing it properly, can affect hair.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I rectify that, that can have a good positive effect on my hair. Because your hair is the last thing that your body cares about. If your hair could, like, if your body was like, oh my God, her kidneys are in distress, they're like, what can we do? Abort the hair. Get rid of the hair.
Yeah, it's the first
like,
thing to go.
Why are you sending blood to the hair? Like, why are you doing anything in
to
that direction?
Take it all out. We need all of that nutrients to go somewhere else.
Some people can be sick and nothing happens to their hair.
Yeah.
But some people are sick and you can see it in their hair straight away. So many things affect the quality of your hair. So therefore, by placing your faith in one thing that you used, that's not clinically proven, because there are things that are clinically proven to grow hair thicker and faster. But that one thing, without knowing what else was going on...
Yeah, it's not good enough.
It's very difficult for me to say it was the oil that grew
it.
Now, if I knew you were in optimum health, you ate a bang... bang in diet. Your diet was 100%.
Yeah.
I knew you had no other hair conditions. I knew you used this oil for a period of some time. And I was able to chart that in a scientific manner and measure it.
Yeah.
I could say, oh yeah, it could be this oil. It could be. I'm not an unreasonable person. I'm not like, oh, I don't believe anything.
Yeah.
Of course I believe things, but I also know so much about hair that I know that this one oil couldn't possibly have done all of that on its own without further evidence.
Exactly. And so I think that's one of the main problems that I find is that people will say, oh, I use this oil specifically because I had a friend who had similar presenting hair loss, even that, or they had a scalp concern. And, you know, it worked for them. But as we said, like alopecia areata, like, even when I treat that one, I can give you certain treatments. But I always say to people, listen, your hair could come back on its own. And we don't know that it's the medication or something that are working. They create an optimum environment for your hair. But at the end of the day, your follicle is going to decide what they want to do in that case.
Yes.
Or if it's like a telogen effluvium, in 3 months, your hair might be like, okay, your internal, like whatever change has happened, we've adjusted to it.
Yeah.
And we don't need any more intervention and now we're ready to grow back properly.
Yes.
So you could use the oil for this time and then think that, oh, it's this wonder product worked.
Yeah.
When it literally could have been nothing at all that either myself or anyone else could have done to help it.
Yeah. You could have had a cold 3 months ago, really high fever. You could have been shedding hair 3 months later, 3 months, so being the present, and then you used the oil for another 3 months.
Yeah.
And you say it's the oil, when actually it was because you shed hair because you had a really high fever and your hair's recovering in the natural
way.
Like I said, it's not that I don't believe in remedies.
Yeah,
but definitely. I can't, you know, especially as professionals, we cannot be saying, yeah, go and rub this oil. And then you come back to me in 6 months and say, my hair didn't come back.
And plus, because we know oils can do so much more damage to the hair, well, to the scalp anyway. Yeah. And I find that products now are marketed, like, I feel like most product ranges will have a scalp oil, especially, or like a growth oil.
Yes.
And my concern is that people are using them, not understanding the mechanisms of what are causing the hair loss in the first place.
Exactly.
Which is why it's really important for whoever you speak to, whether that be your doctor, a dermatologist, your hairstylist, if they're trained, even doing your own research as well, to figure out what is causing your hair loss. Because as I said, some will sporadically regenerate and some will only get worse until there's medical intervention.
Exactly.
And so using the oil might even create another problem on top.
Yeah. Now, you see, with scalp oils, I always tell people, scalp oils, general hot oils, I think they're great as a hot oil treatment. You know, prior to, you know, you use it as a treatment and then you rinse it out. You know, wash it in your normal
shampoo,
wash day. Yeah,
before you shampoo. Your normal.
So they're not redundant in the hair
care. No, not at all.
Routine.
And they're great for your hair.
Yes, they're great for your hair. But like Ebony says, I completely agree with her when she says that you could have a scarring alopecia. And a scarring alopecia means that your hair is not coming. Once that hair follicle disappears, once you start losing that hair, it's not coming back.
Yeah.
And imagine that you've been using an oil or one of these remedies that someone is telling you is going to work to grow your hair back. And in the meantime, 6 months down the line, you actually realize that if you just gotten some help, sought someone to speak to, you could have intervened and you could have kept a lot more of your hair.
Yeah.
But instead, you were using oils or any other kind of home remedy that someone's recommended. Before actually finding out what the diagnosis is. If you know what the diagnosis is and this is the choice that you have made as your treatment plan, that is for you to make
so
that decision.
Yeah.
No one can intervene on what you choose as your treatment option, but make sure you know everything before you choose that, because there's nothing more. There's the biggest kick in the gut is
thinking, know that you could have done something sooner.
If I had just done this, I would have kept it. I could have kept more hair. But I didn't, and now I've lost maybe 10% of my hair, maybe 15, maybe even 40.
Yeah.
And it's because I spent my time trying to get castor oil to grow my hair.
And I find with castor oil especially that it slows down how quickly I can treat somebody.
Yeah.
Because it makes diagnosis that much harder.
Yes.
Because it creates like a false environment on the scalp.
Yeah.
And then I'm usually having to deal with detoxing the hair, making sure I can remove all of those things. And that kind of takes me on to products a little bit. So I was telling people that for your hair, I'm fine with you using oils in the correct way, like not to moisturize but as a sealant, But people, I gave the analogy today that using oil sometimes can be like having Tupperware,
mm-hmm.
and you use it for like your pasta or your tomatoes, mm-hmm. and even though you know it's clean, mm-hmm. you still have that residue there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's not really much you can do to kind of get rid of it.
Yeah.
And then products now that people kind of lean towards are natural, in inverted commas. Yes. They stay away from like harsh chemicals, which I can understand.
Yeah.
But some of them are not strong enough to do what you need them to do. Like, you can't use oils and butters on your hair, mm-hmm. and use a light detergent, because yes. you're not going to get rid of anything.
Yeah. You need something that is a good enough surfactant,
yeah.
to remove that residue and leave your hair and scalp in a clean, you know, what I call like back to zero condition.
Exactly. And I think some naturals especially get scared because they're like, oh, my hair feels really dry afterwards, mm-hmm. but I'm like, you can put that moisture back into your hair, mm-hmm. afterwards. It's not all the time, mm-hmm. that you need to clarify,
yeah.
but you have to get rid of that. And that's, mm-hmm. why I've got a distaste for co-washing.
Yeah,
because I'm like, you're using fabric conditioner, you're not getting it clean properly. Yeah. It's very like surface, and then you're then going to use 100% more oils and things and butters on, yeah. top. I'm like, your hair's just going to have layer and layer and layer, yeah. of just stuff on top of, yeah. it. So nothing can penetrate into the hair and actually do what you want. And that can even lead to hair loss as well.
Mm, yeah. Conditioner is actually, if you look at the, because this is all something that we study, if you look at the formulation of a conditioner,
mm-hmm.
a conditioner is actually to seal moisture into,
yeah,
your
and
hair.
Close the cuticle and, back.
Yeah, and close the cuticle back. A co-wash, the way I look at a co-wash is, it's not actually, I don't look at it as a washing mechanism, mm-hmm. as a cleansing mechanism. I look at as if someone ever uses a co-washer, asks me, should I use a co-wash? I call it a weekly moisturizing refresh.
Yeah.
So you have wet your hair, you have applied a conditioner, you're not expecting your hair to be clean, because you shouldn't expect your hair to be clean
not
after
at all.
A co-wash. You're putting that conditioner co-wash onto your hair to rehydrate it, to put more water, you know, to put that moisture back in and to lock it back in. That's what you're doing it for. It is not to cleanse your scalp.
No, not at all.
Like, you know, and again, come for me again, but yeah, but it's not going to clean your scalp.
It doesn't, yeah.
Scientifically, it is not going to clean your scalp.
Yeah, it's formulated to coat the strands,
yes.
to smooth it down and to... Again, it kind of works like how an oil does. It, yes. creates a barrier around, yeah. each hair strand.
Yeah.
That's why it's so easy to detangle, because you get that slip.
Yes.
That isn't cleansing. You put, essentially, you're putting more things on top of your,
yeah.
hair,
yeah.
rather than removing it.
Yeah.
So if you haven't got a clean base, you just added, if your floor was dirty, and you just put carpet on top of it.
Yeah,
do you know,
yes,
what I mean?
That's it.
The carpet hasn't gone, I mean, yes. the dirt hasn't gone anywhere. You just got something on top, but yeah, you're, yeah. walking and it's bumpy.
Yes. And you're thinking, oh, you know, it feels a bit softer.
Yeah.
Oh, because there's carpet on top.
Yeah. Do you know what? It's like Febreze. You know them adverts where it's like, the house is still dirty. yeah. And they're like, smelling. They're like, here's Febreze. Like, ah. Oh. And they're like, it smells so good in here. But it's socks and...
Yeah, it's still dirty.
Yeah, there's like rotten food and everything. Yes. Not to say that your scalp is that dirty. Like, I think it's great for, yes. a refresh. Especially if you're active. If, yes. you work out, you sweat a lot.
Yeah.
You can't go through the whole washing process.
Yeah, you rinse your scalp.
Yeah.
Put a co-wash in your hair, not your scalp, your hair. Get the hair hydrated again.
Yeah, detangle if, yes. you need to restyle.
Yeah, and then go about your business. Yeah. But when I hear the words that I use the co-wash to cleanse my hair, I just like...
Yeah, I don't need shampoo anymore.
Yeah, that doesn't compute in my head, because... If you study the way a surfactant works, that's the, you know, those are things like cocaine hydropropyl betaine.
I
drop a big word.
Yeah,
in there.
You know, just sprinkle a little sauce.
know?
But you know, people are going to be like, oh, sulfates, I can't say it, so I, yes. can't use it.
Yeah, but that's a natural one, actually. That's one of the more natural, yeah. ones. Sulfates, they're all surfactants, which actually, there is a scientific way that they remove dirt.
Yeah.
They work. You know, and I'm not going to go into all of that, but there is a way that they remove dirt, mm-hmm. separate it from your hair, and leave your hair clean.
Yeah.
And co-washes don't do that.
No.
Like, if a manufacturer comes out and tries to tell me that, but it does,
it's not a conditioner anymore. Yeah. It's not a co-wash.
It's not a co-wash, yeah. Then I need to see the surfactant. I need, yeah. to see what you're using to remove the dirt. And once you show me that, then I will swallow my words.
Mm.
But I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. And I think that's what people don't understand, is that when we say things, it's not to go against people. It's literally because in clinic, in training,
mm-hmm.
these are the things we see.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, when products are being made, like, some people have great intentions,
mm-hmm.
but other people are just literally trying to make money.
Yes.
And they market things in a certain way for, yes. certain things. It's like, oh, you've got dry hair. Oh, you shouldn't, yeah. be using this. You shouldn't be using that. I'm like, there was a reason why things were made.
Yes.
Some of them, I agree with people that they are too harsh.
Yes.
But if you do research on it, you shouldn't just follow blindly to be like, oh no, we don't use shampoo anymore, or, you know, if it suds, it's bad, or blah, blah, blah. But I'm like, shampoos and conditioners work in tandem.
Yeah.
They're different pHs. The shampoo will open a cuticle to let all the dirt out, and the conditioner will come and close it. And basically, you have to use one after the other for it to work. It's like a, it's like a step-by-step process. It works together, like, really well.
Many of the people who are frightened of some of the ingredients in certain things still use them on their body.
Oh, don't. No, 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 no. We can't go that deep on them today.
Shots fired.
Pew, 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 pew.
No, I'm being frank.
In foods as well.
In your food.
Yeah.
The, some of the preservatives that people are trying to avoid, and some of the surfactants that people are trying to avoid, are still in our skincare products.
Yeah. Look up the Dirty Dozen. I can't remember everything that's on the list, but they, even like with fruits and vegetables, there's some that you should only buy organic. And if you are not buying those organic, I feel like that's the best place to start, because what you eat is going to affect you more systemically than what you put onto your skin and on your hair. Then you can kind of go from there. And like, there's nothing wrong with starting in different areas, but there's other places to tackle first.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you know, there are a list of fallacies that I would like to bust open, but you know, just that would have to be in different parts.
Listen, I feel like we're gonna get assassinated, because I feel like someone's gonna be like, nah, do it. You guys have been chatting shit for way too, when did it? And do you know what's really funny? You guys think that now, you know, you guys are talking wicked and bad about all of our products. I sat for at least a year before I said anything.
Yeah, me too.
I've only got the confidence to really speak out against certain things. Like this year, since I opened the salon, I will have a salon in Peckham, if you didn't know. I'll put all the details in the description box. It's been a long time since I've recorded one, you know. A lot's happened.
But yeah, it's true. The thing is that I don't want people to think that I'm coming for certain products, or I'm trying to badmouth certain products. I'm just showing you how you're supposed to use these products. I'm not saying that they're invalid or that they're not useful, or that you should stop buying them. By all means, buy whatever you desire.
That's fine.
But know how to use it.
Exactly.
Like Ebony said, if someone comes to me and says, oh yeah, I just wash my hair with co-wash, that's an oxymoron. Sorry, I'm just dropping some English on you.
It's fine.
It's an oxymoron. Yeah. You can't cleanse with conditioner. You can't do that. You can't cleanse. So I'm just teaching you the right way to use the product. And that way, that will actually give you a better... Because so many people are saying, my hair's not growing, or my hair's not doing this, or I'm not getting what I want out of my hair. I followed this person, and they did this, and they did that. Oh,
we're
going to
talk about that today. No, I feel like we have
that's I told you, this is like different parts.
Yeah.
You know, and they're not getting the results they want. Just look at the... Keep things simple.
Yeah.
Look at what the product is supposed to do. Understand what each product is supposed to do for your hair and scalp.
Yeah.
And just use them that way. And you'll find that your life is a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you'll really enjoy your hair
so
regimen.
So much more.
So much more.
Yeah.
You know, when you stop thinking about, you know, the pre-poo and the pre-wash.
And you know, a lot of those things that I find that we do, like our wash day being a day, it's because we do so much or so little throughout the time building up to having to wash, having to cleanse. That we have to spend so much time kind of getting our hair back to an ideal state.
Yeah.
Like, when I stopped using a lot of heavier products on my hair, I don't really need to pre-poo that often. Because my hair doesn't... I wash now more regularly, so my hair doesn't have a chance to get that tangled or that dry. So I don't have to spend hours before I can even put water on it.
Exactly.
And now I can get my hair... I'm a hairstylist, but I can do my hair in, like, an hour and a half. And that's from, like, wash to style. Like, be ready to go out of the door.
Yeah. Same here. So I can give an example. Yesterday, I came home and I got home about 7 o'clock. The first thing I did was I went to the bathroom and I changed, and then I shampooed my hair. I then put my deep conditioner in, put a towel on top of my plastic, and then went and cooked my dinner.
Yeah.
When I finished cooking my dinner and I finished dancing in the kitchen a bit, I went back to the bathroom.
What were you dancing to?
Oh, my mega mix. You know, I like 90s and noughties music.
Okay,
I'm like such an old school girl.
Yeah, cool.
So when I finished, I went back and rinsed my hair.
Yeah.
I ate my dinner, and then I just moisturized my hair. The only thing that I worried about was that my hair wouldn't be dry by the morning, and I wanted my hair to be dry. I actually wanted to finish styling my hair, so I wanted to, like, a big chunky twist and take them to work. So I actually blow dried my hair.
Yeah.
But That whole process wasn't a day. Yeah. I did that in the evening.
After a work day.
Yeah. So when people ask me about, oh, is natural hair hard? Oh, I don't know how to manage my hair. I'm really worried. The first thing I want to say to them, you know, is that keep it simple.
Yeah.
Keep it simple. What do I need? I'll just tell you, you need a shampoo. I even say shampoo, deep conditioner.
Yeah.
A leave-in conditioner. And maybe a light oil.
Yeah. See, I feel like I go for like 5 products.
Yeah.
I'm like, you don't need anything more than 5. The shampoo conditioner, I have a leave-in.
Yeah.
Maybe like a oil or like a butter or something. Yeah. And I have a styler as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I like to do twist outs and stuff. Yeah. But I need something that's going to give my hair a little bit of hold.
Agreed.
But more than 5 products, I don't really like... Yes, in different situations, you need different things.
Yes.
But as long as you have like your 3 to 5, like 3 Staple. Essentials.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't want to see like your bathroom can't look like my salon.
Yeah.
People come in and sit and say, like, oh, I've got this. I'm like, you don't even know which one's doing what.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why it's best to keep it simple.
Yeah.
And that brings me like kind of round. So whilst trichology, there's a very scientific element of it and where we treat hair and scalp conditions, we also understand hair.
Yeah. You know, and Afro hair especially.
Yeah, Afro hair is like our specialty.
Yeah.
Like, we studied in all types of hair.
Mm-hmm.
We can handle all conditions in all types of hair. Yeah. Yeah, anyone can come and sit.
But we chose to focus on Afro hair because sometimes the advice may be given by someone who doesn't understand our hair.
Yes.
It can seem very abrasive.
Yes. And it can seem like, but hold on, you don't understand. So, for example, I've had it where, you know, a Caucasian trichologist is telling someone not to oil their scalp.
Yeah.
Let's just say that it's almost like the person had earplugs in.
Yeah.
They were like, no way, I don't know. This person does not know what they're talking about. But from my perspective, now I can say that and I can actually legitimately tell you that I have not done it for the longest time.
Yeah.
And I recommend to people to stop. And when people have stopped, they thank you. Yeah. They're like, oh, actually, I don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realise I didn't need it.
Yeah. And they realise that itchiness stops as well.
Yes.
And like inflammation and stuff as well.
The scope of what the trichologist can do, and we have more time as well with you. So, you know, you might ask me about your scalp condition, but you might also ask me about how you can manage your hair. I can answer both questions.
Yeah.
So can Ebony. In fact, Ebony's like, I feel like she's just like one step, you know. Hey, she does the hair too, you know. She can give you a hairstyle too. Well, I stopped there. I'm not doing giving you a hairstyle.
But it's more about what we want to do with this is, again, not to make anybody feel bad or feel judged, like, oh my God, my hair's horrible. Like,
exactly.
Literally, when I tell you, anybody can come sit in my chair. I don't care if you washed your hair this morning or 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because all I want to do is try and help you learn your hair better.
Yeah.
And so when we say these things, it's just that so that you don't get to a stage where you really need us.
Yeah.
Because so many things that we see can be, maybe not necessarily prevented, but there's things that can exacerbate conditions.
Yes.
And we're like, if we can remove all of that, it's easier to treat one thing than the 5 or so things that we often see.
Yeah. It's easier to get to the crux of the hair loss issue than trying to remove all these other issues before we can say, okay, this is your hair loss issue.
And then when you have like a good regime or plan or care for your hair, you'll often see it flourish. So that when something is off, it's easier to realise.
Yes.
Because now I feel like black women, we put up with damaging hairstyles, products that aren't fit for purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And so we will be having shedding or having like hair loss issues and just like attraction alopecia. Some people just accept that they're not going to have edges again, you know?
Yeah.
Or we go to the hair salon and our braids are tight, they're heavy, we get irritation from it. Yep. And we all think this is like normal.
It's not normal.
It's not. It's so wildly absurd.
I actually refuse to be in discomfort with my hair.
Ah, me too.
If it hurts, it's coming out.
If I cannot move my eyebrows straight away, like I can do the Rock's eyebrow, if I can't do that when I'm doing it or my eyebrows are up, if you feel any kind of tension when it's there, tell your hairdresser, listen, that braid you just did, take it out now.
Yeah, it's too tight.
And if they argue with you, you need to lift up yourself out of their chair. Ask for your money back and leave. No style is worth your edges.
Yeah, it's not worth it. You know, if something is uncomfortable, even with chemical treatments, because, whilst, you know, we've talked about a lot about natural hair, there are people that still chemically treat their hair.
And that's even colouring.
Yeah.
Keratin treatments.
Yes.
Not even just as strong as relaxers.
Exactly. And, you know, if it doesn't feel right, say something. Yeah. You know, don't let it burn you, because traction can be as a result of poor relaxers as well. So, you know, there are a lot of things that I feel, and I've said this in many talks I've done, that as black women, it's almost like...
I'll be talking, booking info in the bio.
I always say that it's almost like black women are accustomed to pain.
We
want our beauty to be painful.
Do you know sometimes I've been shampooing, someone said, like, you're not getting hard enough. I'm like, so I should break my lovely nose so I can scratch your scalp. It's you that's mad, that's me. No, I'm sorry, I cannot do it. I cannot. My products are concentrated and work hard enough so that I don't have to break my back.
I went to my childhood hairdresser.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's old school hairdressing.
Yeah.
And she shampooed my hair. My head was hurting.
You know, it's like banging against the side of the sink.
I wanted to look at her hands.
Yeah.
When she finished, I was like, hey, my head is hurting me. Why is my head pinning me? Eh? I was just like, nah, man, no.
Yeah.
But the thing is, we're so accustomed to pain. Everything, like, how many of you are like, when you use a toothpaste, it must burn?
Ah. You know, you use like toothbrushes.
You use the hardest toothbrush. And your gums are receding, and the dentist is telling you your gums are receding, and you're like, no, 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 but my breath must be fresh. No, I'm not saying use a super soft toothbrush so your breath is... But what I'm saying is that we're so used to things hurting. Yeah. You know, when we come out of the salon, oh, Croydon facelift.
Taking paracetamol with you, that's mad. You can't sleep the first night. If you've got sensitive scalp, it's different. But in general, your hair should be able to move without pain.
Yeah.
And then, for the love of God, take it out after 4 to 6 weeks. Yes. Maximum.
Yep.
And please... wash your hair in between. I think we have to just end it there, you know? Like mic drop and just be like, boom. Because you can see it for hours.
Honestly, these are all tips that we're giving you, like, because there's so many people that will tell me that, oh, I couldn't sleep, my head was so tired, my scalp was burning from the extension hair I was using. Yeah.
But then it's expensive, so I don't want to take it out. Itching.
It was itching like crazy. I've got sores in my head. This is not normal.
Yeah.
These things aren't normal, and we need to redefine what is normal for us.
Exactly.
We need to, like, shift it. Once we, as the consumers, make that shift, the providers of these services will then also make the shift.
Yeah.
Those people who are doing tight braids, and you ask them not to, and they were still doing it, when people stop going to them, they'll start rethinking, maybe my braids are too tight.
Yeah.
Even though they've been told 50 times... People, you know, walking away and say, you know what, I do like your handiwork, but, you know, you really do them too tightly.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a confrontation. You really do them too tightly. And I've got a very sensitive scalp. And
the sign of a good hairdresser will be like, okay, I understand. Yeah. Thank you for letting me know.
Yeah. Because, you know, there are conditions out there. So there's a scar and alopecia that's particularly prevalent in black women. And we don't know what is causing it.
Yeah.
But one of the things that they think is a history of doing tight braids.
Yeah.
You know, and using oils on the scalp. So, like, those are two mic drops right there.
Yeah.
You know, so if these things are going to eventually, potentially lead to a scar in alopecia in your mid to late 30s.
And it's getting earlier now.
Yeah.
Seeing a lot more women with conditions that should be, like, postmenopausal.
Yes.
In their, like, mid to early 30s.
Exactly.
And that's scary for me.
You know, if you bear those things in mind when you're doing your hair, it will greatly help you.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've spoken about a lot.
We have. There's a lot to digest.
There's a lot. There's loads of... Hair is not as simple as people think it is.
On the treatment side, but it can be on the day-to-day looking after it side.
Yes. Yes. Scientifics of hair and growth and that kind of thing, that's taken us some study.
Yeah. And know what? You don't need to have as much information as we have.
No,
I think the last point is that, just another time. We can't even do that today because that will open a new can of worms. I was going to say about, you know, how, like, online people just be throwing around terms and shit. And I'm just like, you know, yeah, we can't.
That's chapter two.
Yeah. So we're going to be back soon. What we want to leave you with is just an understanding that your hair doesn't have to be difficult. All of these things that they say about black hair, about it being unmanageable, coarse, it doesn't grow, that's all that rubbish.
Yeah.
Don't use oils on your scalp. That's the biggest takeaway. And if you've got a problem with that, you can email me. But I charge via PayPal if you want to ask me questions, innit? So you're not going to waste my time arguing with me. But if you actually have scientific studies, I'm willing to learn.
Yeah.
I'm always willing to learn.
Well, someone actually, before we actually
finisher.
Someone actually asked a really pertinent question at one of the things. Not that people normally ask impertinent questions, but this one was particularly, it was, you know, well thought out when he asked it, and it was from a man.
Okay.
He asked, why do we put lotions on our body?
Yeah.
And we don't do it, you're saying we shouldn't apply it directly to the scalp because the scalp is skin as well. Now, there's two things there. Number one, when you shower, particularly on black skin, when you come out of the shower, you're still quite moist.
Mm-hmm.
When you apply your butter, if you're just using butters, for example, then you're locking in the moisture that you just had from the shower. Yeah. So that's number one. Number two, if you're using a body butter or a moisturizer, it's a combination of oils and water.
Yeah.
It's an emulsification of the two. So when you apply it to your skin, it absorbs and then the oil locks in the moisture.
But please, that is different from you putting oil and water in your spray bottle.
Exactly. And what I would like to say is that there are, if you remember earlier on, I said that each hair follicle has a sebaceous gland attached to it. There are very few areas on our body that have that many sebaceous glands. You know, there's the areas that we have to take.
Sort of,
the hairy the pubic areas.
And the,
underarm areas.
Is it auxiliary? No. Axillary.
Yeah, so, you know, there are particular parts of your body which are have sebaceous areas, but most of our skin doesn't.
And it's a different type of hair as well.
Yeah.
Vellus hair. Not terminal.
It's not terminal hair. So there's no oil glands. That's why we have to do it there. And that's why we don't have to do it on our scalp. That's what I will leave you with.
Yeah. I also say that if oil was so good at growing hair, we would all be Wolverine.
Oh my gosh.
So that was my mic drop.
Don't talk about my love Wolverine.
Oh, you love Wolverine.
I love X-Men.
Yeah, a guy that uses castor oil all over his body, didn't it?
Yeah. We should be having this out after.
Well, guys, that has been another episode of Snatched Edges. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm going to link to Stephanie's Instagram page, website, so you can also book her, because she's an amazing trichologist. Would you like to let the people know? I'll just write it down where they can find you.
My name is Stephanie Say. If you Google me, you'll find me. My surname is spelled S for Sierra, E for Echo, Y for Yankee.
Excellent.
Stephanie with a PH.
Cool. All right then, let's leave it there. Take care, people.
Bye.